I'd like us to look this evening at two pictures, one from the Old Testament section of the Bible and the second from the New Testament. But both, as I hope you will see, are dealing with the same idea. It's the theme of broken systems and living waters. And the first of these pictures we find in that second chapter of the prophecy of Jeremiah. It's 600 years before Christ. And Jeremiah is speaking to Judah and the people of Jerusalem. He is to minister for 40 years with the same consistent and challenging message. He will warn the people of impending judgment. Jeremiah is known as the weeping prophet. He had a message of sorrow. He had a message of warning. His was a message of urging a rebellious people to return to God. And he wept. He wept over them. He grieved for them. He shed tears for them. And in chapter 2 of his prophecy, God directs this searching question to his people. What wrong did your fathers find in me that they went far from me and went after worthlessness? What wrong did your fathers find in me? God's people have changed from worshipping the God who made all things and the God who led them in the wilderness years. And what have they changed this God for? They've changed it for a God who does not profit, for gods who are worthless, for gods of no value, for gods who cannot give any blessing at all. So we pick up the reading in verse 11 of that chapter. Continuing the theme, has a nation changed its gods, even though they are no gods? But my people have changed their glory for that which does not profit. And then this strong cry, be appalled, O heavens, at this. Be shocked. Be utterly desolate, declares the Lord. Are you taken back a little by the strength of that language? The word appalled is a strong word in English, but it is a fair translation. It simply reflects the strength of the original Hebrew. The sense is, be astonished, be thunderstruck, be stupefied. It contains the sense of being horrified or devastated. And without embarrassing those here this evening who may be follically challenged, there's a sense that this word means, let your hair be lifted up. Let your hair be lifted up. Let it stand on end. But there's another aspect of this word, translated appalled, that it's an aspect that the news is so shocking, it provides provokes an uncontrollable trembling or shaking. This desertion of God is so surprising, it makes your hair stand on end, or it causes you to tremble. Now, I currently work with an ex-soldier called Josh, who served in Afghanistan as a cameraman. And he tells of when, coming under attack from the Taliban, he received the news on the radio you just did not want to hear. Man down. It turned out one of his comrades had been shot in the leg, and Josh was closest and first to the scene. And when he found him, Josh rumbled in his bag to get the bandages out. He knew what his job was, despite the danger of further fire, his task was to stop the bleeding, bind up the wound as quickly as he could, and try to get this fellow soldier to safety. But he was completely overcome with trembling. His hands were shaking. He couldn't open the package of bandages, so much so that it was the exasperated, injured soldier who said, "I'll give it here, mate, I'll do it myself." But there's this sense in this passage of trembling. Be appalled. This is the picture. But did you notice who is appalled in this passage in Jeremiah? It's the sun. It's the moon. It's the stars. It's the heavenly bodies. The sun is appalled. The moon, the planets are stupefied. And of course, there is a great appropriateness about this, because so often these are the focus of pagan worship, the worship of the sun and the moon and the stars. And the people in Jeremiah's day had copied the nations all around, and instead of worshipping the true creator, they'd made for themselves gods of wood or stone to trust in, or they'd bowed and offered worship to the sun or to the moon. And then in verse 13, we have the cause of this astonishment. The Lord through Jeremiah says, "My people have committed two evils. The first one is, they have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters. And the second is, they've hewn out cisterns for themselves, broken cisterns that can hold no water." Two evils. They've forsaken God, the fountain of living waters, and they've hewn out cisterns, and those cisterns are broken and can hold no water. Two complaints the Lord has against his people. They're not minor complaints. They're not insignificant deficiencies of character. They're not the equivalent of minor traffic or parking offences. These are matters of life and death for these people. They've forsaken God. Forsaken is a word that means to leave, but it's much more than simply forgetting. It's to leave, it's to go away, it's to turn around and to walk away and not look back. It's to journey to the far land. Despite everything that God had done for them, they turned away. They forsook him. There's that sense in which forsaken is a dreadful word. We may all feel forgotten at times, but to be forsaken, that's a desperate situation to be in. That's to be abandoned. Let me be forgotten, but don't let me be forsaken. So this is what is so astonishing. The people are abandoning the God who made him. And not only that, he is the one who is the source of life itself. Here described as the fountain of living waters. There's something pure and quite wondrous in this description of God. Pure, refreshing, clean, holy, and good. The fountain of living waters. The one who alone can truly quench our thirst. The spring which contains within it the very means of life and refreshment and satisfaction, life itself. The New Testament equivalent, I suppose, is John's words, he who has the Son has life. He who does not have the Son does not have life. Here is this spring of living water, the one true, pure, holy God. This is the one the people have forsaken. As one of the hymn writers that we sometimes sing has put it, the Lord, he is the fountain, the sweet, deep well of love. The streams on earth I've tasted, more deep I'll drink above. So here is a people who've turned away from the fountain of living waters, the source of all life and hope. But there is a second part to God's complaint. What is worse was that not only had they abandoned God, the fountain of living waters, but the people had made their own cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water to take his place. They'd expended energy and time and effort on making their own cisterns, but they're broken cisterns. So what are these cisterns that they're expending their energy on? These cisterns that they've built? Well, essentially in those days, they're either holes dug in the earth or more normally carved out of the rock. And they're there for the purpose of collecting and storing water. Now Josephus, the Jewish historian, commented that there were thousands of these cisterns carved out of the rock in the area around the Lake of Galilee alone. In fact, in his history, he says he counted 240 in one day in the upper regions of Galilee. He said the view resembled something like a honeycomb. So there are these cisterns all around to hold and retain water. And of course, it required effort to make a cistern, but it was never ideal, because once cracked, once broken, it was useless. And where there should be a supply of cool, refreshing water, there is stagnant and dirty water instead. So God still speaks through Jeremiah. Here is this challenging picture, even for us tonight. Have you and I forsaken God tonight? Have you abandoned the fountain of living waters? And are you expending all your time, all your energy, all your resources in making and drinking from the cisterns you've dug in order to take his place and to try to satisfy your deepest needs? As Josephus looked at those upper regions of Galilee, he noted hundreds of cisterns like a honeycomb. So all around us, people are busy digging their own cisterns instead of drinking from the fountain of living waters. So are we digging our cisterns of popularity or pleasure or success or fame or fortune? And we could spend much time this evening considering all of those cisterns. But I'd like just to comment briefly on something that is so prevalent in our society. So instead of drinking from the fountain of living waters, we make our God our cisterns, our wealth and our riches. Materialism is a God many all around us are worshipping today, but it's a broken cistern. So it's our Jubilee week, it's said that the first Queen Elizabeth had multitudes of ornate, beautiful costumes and clothes for every royal occasion. Many were worn only once. Imagine that. A beautiful outfit worn only once. They were rich. They were lavish. They're made of the finest material money could buy. But as the aged Queen Elizabeth was dying and seeing her time ebb away, one of her last words was this: "All my possessions for one moment of time. All my possessions for one moment of time." Broken systems, of no help to her, of no value to her, when she was striving for every breath and clinging on to life. All my possessions. I remember a pastor telling a story of how he once attended to a very sick man who was nearing the end of his life. His family were gathered around, and the pastor sought to provide some comfort and guidance. But the family, as they're beside their dying loved one, well, what were they doing? Well, they were squabbling. What were they squabbling about? They were arguing over who was to have this or that possession when the poor man died. They were arguing about the car or the television or the ornaments or the furniture. The pastor said he looked at the sick man, and the poor man had a look on his face of, "Why have I bothered? Why all the effort? All I've done is build my own systems and hand them on to my own children, only for them to discover in time that they're broken systems and cannot satisfy their souls." As Jesus said, "What will it profit you if you gain the whole world and forfeit your soul? What will you give in exchange for your soul?" And we could spend a long time this evening talking about other broken systems. What about the system of success? What happens when I finally reach the pinnacle of what I've been striving for? Glory on the sports field? Glory in the office? Glory in this career or that career? Glory in the number of likes and that sense of popularity? Well, they're broken systems. And when you reach the pinnacle, there's that sense of dissatisfaction, of emptiness, a sense of wanting more, a sense of, is that it? They're broken systems. Well, in the time that remains this evening, will you look with me at the second picture, this time from the New Testament? We've looked at the broken systems in the Old Testament, in the prophecy of Jeremiah. And now I'd like to look at the picture which we find in John chapter 7. And in verse 37, we read, "On the last day of the feast, the great day, Jesus stood up and cried out, 'If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water.'" Well, we're back in Jerusalem. It's the last day of the feast. It's the great day. This is the feast of tabernacles or booths or tents. It was a festival that lasted for 7 days or so. And when the people of Israel would make tents out of branches and live in them for a week to remember the time in their history when their ancestors lived in tents in the wilderness. And pilgrims would travel from miles around. And Jerusalem would be full of makeshift tents and coverings. This was the great celebration of how God provided for them in that desert land for 40 years and how he still provided for them today. The final day of the feast was a day of great rejoicing. You can imagine young children running happily through the streets excitedly. The city was filled with travellers. And in the midst of that hustle and bustle and noise and excitement, with great ceremony, a priest would leave in procession from the temple and make his way, surrounded by crowds waving branches, to the pool of Siloam. He'd carry with him a golden vase or a golden vessel. And on reaching the pool of Siloam, with great ceremony again, he would fill that vessel with water from the pool. This would then be carried back to the temple. There would be three trumpet blasts, and then this vessel of water would be poured out on the altar of sacrifice. This was to represent God's pouring out his spirit upon the people. And then the priests would lead the people in singing psalms of praise. And as the final refrain of Psalm 118 was sung and subsided, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his steadfast love endures forever." And then at that moment, there was silence. And in the middle of this rejoicing, and quite possibly just at this very moment, Jesus stands up, and with that image of water being poured out fresh in people's minds, in a loud voice, so he can be heard throughout Jerusalem and still can be heard by us today, Jesus cries out, "If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink." J.C. Ryle said, "This verse should be written in letters of gold. If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink." Jesus is speaking to the vast crowds. He's saying, "Do you thirst? Then come to me and drink. Are you thirsting after God? Then come to me and drink. Do you want the Spirit of God to be poured out on you? Then come to me and drink." And my question for you this evening is simply this: are you thirsting after God? The psalmist puts it like this: look at that majestic, graceful deer, running at full speed to escape danger, and then, worn out, drinking from a cool, refreshing stream. As a deer pants for flowing streams, so longs my soul, O God, for you. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. As the hymn writer says, as the deer pants for cooling streams, when heated in the chase, so longs my soul, O God, for thee and thy refreshing grace. Are you thirsting after God tonight? Did you notice the word "anyone" in our verse? Jesus said, "If anyone thirsts." It is an all-inclusive invitation. It's an invitation to everyone. It includes you and it includes me. If you're searching and thirsting for something more in this world, this verse is for you. If you're restless, then this is for you. If you're quenching your thirst on all that the world promises, whatever that is, this verse is for you. If you're digging your own cisterns, this verse is for you. So Jesus stands and says, if anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. This is the pure water that alone can satisfy our souls. This is the stream that satisfies our greatest need, that makes us right with God. This is the stream where we drink forgiveness of sins and peace with God. Though we have, like those in Jeremiah's day, forsaken God, this is the stream we can drink from. We come to Jesus Christ and we drink. We cast all our care upon him. We believe him. We trust him. We drink from that life-giving stream. We read of his perfect, his pure, his beautiful life, and we drink. We read of his death on the cross, bearing away sin, being punished for sins not his own, and we drink from that life-giving stream. We read of his rising from the dead in triumph, and we drink. We read of God pouring out his Spirit on those who turn to him, and we drink. If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. Is the water real? This living water? Will it really satisfy my deepest longings and yearnings? Will Jesus Christ really satisfy my deepest needs? Well, recently, may not surprise you, I drove to a park run. Not to take part, I hasten to add. What do you hope for when you're giving a lift to a park run? You hope that the organisers of the park run have had the good sense to locate the run close to a good coffee shop. It's the only hope. So what did I do in that half an hour? I sat down with a cup of tea and an obligatory blueberry muffin, and for that brief time, I thought about this verse. Well, what happened? As I read J.C. Ryle's comments on this verse, and I sought to be still for a moment, and I thought of the broken cisterns in this world, I knew just a little of God drawing near. I knew what it was, just a little bit, to drink from the river of God, which is full of water. Have you known what it is when God draws near? Have you known God drawing near to your soul? If I drink of the cisterns that I have made, I will be thirsty again, and I'll want more, because it doesn't satisfy my deepest needs. I will go back and I'll drink and I'll drink and I'll drink again, and it will never satisfy my soul. But when God draws near, when you drink of the living waters, you too will want to drink and drink and drink again. But here's the difference. We drink and we drink and we drink from our broken cisterns because they cannot satisfy our thirst. But when we taste the living waters, we want to go back and drink and drink and drink again for this simple reason. They satisfy my thirst. I want to drink again, not because it doesn't satisfy, but because it does. And I want to know more of that living water. Horatius Bonner wrote the following. He said, I heard the voice of Jesus say, behold, I freely give the living water. Thirsty one, stoop down and drink and live. What did he do? I came to Jesus and I drank of that life-giving stream. My thirst was quenched, my soul revived, and now I live in him. Jesus said, if anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink.